Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to Special Edition, a weekly look at the issues in the news and the personalities shaping the stories. Special Edition is a production of Intercom Communications.
Welcome to Special Edition. I'm Paula Degnan. A very crowded show this weekend. We're going to get right to it. We'll start off with Intercom's Webster and Nancy, who had the opportunity to speak with Senator Bob Casey on several different issues, two of which we will give you more information on. But first, let's hear from them.
We have with us U.S. Senator Bob Casey here in Pennsylvania. Your office released a letter that you wrote to the Postmaster General, and you've obviously gotten some kind of communications from someone in the Postal Service here in northeastern Pennsylvania, pictures and some information about backed up mail and mail delays and issues as we're getting towards a lot of people going to be doing, you know, the mail-in and the absentee ballots. Can you tell us what it is that you've learned and what you're asking for?
Yeah, the information we received, and this is after I was at the Scranton facility back in the middle of August. And at that time, we were there because three of the 11 mail sorting machines had been removed. All this flows from the changes that the postmaster, DeJoy, in Washington has changes he implemented with these sorting machines and all kinds of other changes. Well, now we have evidence that there were truckloads, an estimated five tractor trailer loads of delayed mail sitting in the Scranton mail sorting facility. There's no excuse for that, and it's proof positive again that the changes that he started to implement with his corporate approach to the Postal Service has been wreaking havoc. His job is twofold, at least for this year. Number one is he's got to make sure that mail gets delivered on time, especially if it's a prescription medication or something very important. And secondly, he's got to make sure that the ballots get delivered so the right to vote is upheld. And unfortunately, despite the great work of letter carriers and postal workers who dedicate their lives to this service, he's treating it like a for-profit corporation and undermining the work that they do every day.
Well, Senator, the press release that you issued, and it comes with photographs, includes the word sabotage. I think that's a lot of word there, isn't it? I mean, you know, maybe inefficiency, at worst ineptitude, but sabotage is something really requires some extraordinary proof, doesn't it?
Well, look, I think when you consider the changes that he's implemented, not just here in Pennsylvania, but all across the country, and the results we've seen across the country, and I don't think I've gotten more mail on, or in whether it's email or letters or otherwise, I don't think I've gotten more contacts on this than I have on this issue. Over 100,000 people in a couple of weeks this summer wrote to us about this. So it's unprecedented. And if they don't like the word sabotage, well, that's their problem. But I'm going to stay on them. Not going to allow them to just keep playing games here. He went in front of the Congress and testified under oath. He said it was just a dip in the service, and he wouldn't answer questions. So we're just going to keep pressing him because he needs to be answerable to the American people. He works for us. This isn't some corporation. He works for the American people.
We have under 30 days to go until the election, and the way it stands right now, if people get, I know the fight continues, but if people get their ballot postmarked by election day, we still have just 3 days until that Friday that they have to arrive at the County Election Bureau.
Right.
When you hear about five, if this is indeed true, five trailer loads of mail, how can we move forward and feel safe about that, putting a ballot in the mail?
Well, look, I have a lot of confidence in the postal workers, letter carriers to get the job done. You know, by some estimates, they deliver on a single day during the Christmas rush more than 100 million pieces. Some think it's as high as 150 million. So we're not going to have 160 million people voting on the same day. So look, I've no doubt at all that they'll get the job done. But we have to sound the alarm when we see problems within the system that are directly attributable to his corporate changes. This wasn't happening 8 months ago or 8 years ago. It's been happening since he took over. And this is what you get when you appoint a corporate friend of the president who gave him a lot of money to support either his campaign or his inauguration. He should have appointed a professional, someone who not only knows how the Postal Service is supposed to run and that it is a service, a public service, it's not a corporation, and we're suffering from that. But look, do I have confidence in the post office for Election Day? Absolutely. 100% confident. But when the system isn't working because of the corporate leadership, you need to smack them. Of course, that's figuratively speaking.
Well, you know, in terms of efficiency, it's kind of been a running joke. And I mean, I don't know. I guess we all just sort of figure, well, they know best. But, you know, for years you've heard the story about, and here's a good example of it. I live in German. If I drop a letter in a mailbox in German and I'm sending it to Archbald, which is the next town, it's literally borders it. It'll go into the mailbox in German. It goes into the German post office. It goes into a truck. It'll go to German or to Scranton. I mean, it'll go to Archbald or to Scranton. Then it takes a ride to the Lehigh Valley where it's put in another truck and sent back here to Archbald. So, I mean, the efficiency is, you know, you hope that that's what the focus is, but I don't know if you can count on it ever.
Well, no, look, I don't think there's any question. There have been inefficiencies that need to be corrected, but this is a gross departure even from that. And look, they know it. They know the fact that this is different. But look, what we should be doing is coming together in Washington to fix those kinds of inefficiencies. You know, the Postal Service has been required over the years to pre-fund pre-fund retirement and health care to the point where no other agencies have to do that. So the Congress, starting in 2006, the year before I got to the United States Senate, put the Postal Service at a disadvantage. That should be corrected. But we can correct those problems at the same time, we can hold them accountable for these gross abuses. And I hold the leadership accountable because they're the ones who took the sorting machines away. They're the ones who thought they could run it a different way. And look, government's not a business. It's a service. And if you treat it like a corporation, you're going to run into these problems.
Let's talk a little bit about the Senate. Obviously, you're a part of that. And the Senate, we heard from Mitch McConnell, is while no business is being done, looks like, except for the confirmation process for Amy Coney Barrett. Do you feel safe? I wonder with the number of, I think, what is it, three senators right now that are COVID positive. Is there a plan for you guys for testing at all? Or is there any kind of contact tracing that you know of going on? Have you heard from anybody about that?
Well, there's certainly not contact tracing going on at the White House, and they should allow that to happen now. They've got a major outbreak. I think the number as of this morning is like 18 people, including the president. They should have the CDC come in there, who are waiting in the wings to help them. Have the CDC come in and do contact tracing so that people know who has it. That should be without a doubt. But the White House seems to want to keep that a big secret. Same has to happen in the Senate. Now, the good news is in the Congress, when there's a similar circumstance, the attending physician and others will make sure that there is that contact tracing. But I think it just points to a larger concern that I have, where the president and, frankly, his party in the Senate has not taken this seriously. Most Republican senators wear a mask when they're on the floor and walking throughout the Capitol. But a lot of them, I've noticed lately, have not. And this, you know, some of them who have the virus now were not wearing a mask at that White House event a couple Saturdays ago. So we've got to make sure that we tackle this virus, because if you don't tackle the virus, you can't create the jobs and rebuild the economy that we've got to rebuild now. Look at the unemployment rates in northeastern Pennsylvania in August. I counted of the 12 counties surrounding Lackawanna County, including Lackawanna, seven of the 12 have 10% unemployment or higher. More than 10,000 people out of work in Lackawanna County, more than 18,000 out of work in Luzerne County. A lot of people out of work, and until you get more control of the virus or begin to wrestle it to the ground, so to speak, the economic devastation will continue.
I just wanted to ask you quickly, what are your thoughts? This week we found out a colleague, but, you know, Republican U.S. Senator Pat Toomey announced here 2 years before he would be up for re-election that he is not running. You know, he's talked a lot about you two working together in the past. I just wanted to get your comments on his announcement.
Yeah, I was surprised by that news, and I communicated with Pat on Sunday when I after reading about it. But I can understand, you know, every public official has to decide when it's time to move on, if that's their choice. But we as you know, we didn't agree on issues like, you know, Medicaid and tax policy and a lot of other big issues. But we did try to work together, and we're successful in working together to confirm 29 district court judges. I think it's the best record in the country. We were working together as well as states that had two Democrats and two Republicans. And we did work together on a number of other issues, and it shows that even when you disagree substantially, you can work together, and I enjoyed doing that. And he'll have two more years in the Senate. Look forward to working with him where we can.
The U.S. Postal Service coming under scrutiny, especially with the election coming up. Scott Seaborg is the Pennsylvania State Director of All Voting is Local. He talks about voting by mail and those naked ballots.
Scott, we have an election that's getting so close. There's so much going on. Can you help us sort it all out? What's this? What are these new rules that are being put in place?
Absolutely. There's a lot going on. We're in unprecedented times, and I'm here to share one important thing about voting by mail, which is don't vote with a naked ballot. And what is a naked ballot? So when you get your vote by mail ballot, it comes with the ballot itself, a secrecy envelope, and a mailing envelope. And Pennsylvania wants all vote by mail ballots to be as secure as possible. And that's why it's important to vote your ballot, put it in the secrecy envelope, pack that on in the mail envelope, sign and date it, and then get that to your county election office. And this was a change that happened from the Pennsylvania Supreme Court.
So where do these secrecy envelopes come from? Where do we get them?
So they will arrive with your ballot. And I think the idea is that Pennsylvania county and election officials really want to make sure your vote is between, you know, you and your ballot. And so that secrecy envelope ensures that once the secrecy envelope is removed from that mailing envelope, that your ballot then is anonymous and your vote is cast in the manner in which you choose.
Don't just start throwing things away when you get your ballot and cast your ballot is basically what you're trying to tell us.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
When we talk about this, Scott, again, a lot of people are still, with all of the publicity on it and all of the discussion, so many people are still very concerned about voting by mail. So do you have any insight into, let's say somebody gets a ballot and then in the mail, and then they decide, I really think maybe I'm okay and I am going to go in person. What would they do at that point?
Now, that's a great question. And voting by mail is so new in Pennsylvania, it's understandable that folks have concerns. We do know that voting by mail is a secure way to vote, but we also know that voting in person is really important to a lot of people for many, many reasons. And so if you're in a position where you've received your vote by mail ballot and you would like to go ahead and vote in person in your county, what you would do is take your unvoted ballot, the entire thing, all the papers, all the envelopes, with you to the polling place. And what's going to happen is you give that ballot over and it will be what's considered spoiled. And at that point, you will be able to vote regularly in the manner in which your county has you voting. So sometimes that's a machine, sometimes that's, you know, a touch screen. And you want to make sure that the judge of election doesn't ask you to vote provisionally. You are able to vote regularly if you bring your unvoted mail ballot to the in-person polling.
And that's important. You have to bring that with you.
Absolutely.
Okay. When a lot of people, again, are concerned about the whole voting by mail process, and, you know, again, a lot of this is still, well, it's all still new because people voted by absentee ballot for years. So what's the difference between the voting absentee ballot and now people wanting to vote by mail that's causing such disruption?
That is such a great question, and I think that gets to the core of our the narrative and dialogue right now as a country. Absentee voting and voting by mail are literally the same thing. And when we have politicians and different elected officials out here trying to cast aspersions on one but not the other, it's really confusing to me because they're all voting by mail. It's the same process that we've used in Pennsylvania for decades and decades. The difference is that folks have the option to do that now. And importantly, in the pandemic, you know, I myself am a person with a compromised immune system. I've got an autoimmune condition I have to take medication for. And there's just no way I feel safe going to a polling place in person. So I'm going to have to vote by mail. And it's a really important option for folks. And so, you know, concerns, absolutely. We have to do everything in our power to secure our elections and make sure that they have the utmost integrity. And so I appreciate that folks are concerned, that they're keeping watch, that they're really considering this heavily. And also the absentee ballots and the vote by mail ballots are literally the same thing.
Scott, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and hopefully we will talk to you after the election. I'd love to have your take on everything that happens, not politically, but how the process works.
Absolutely.
And can you let us know how we can find All Voting is Local online?
Absolutely. You can go to allvotingislocal.org, and we've got lots of great information there. Thank you so much for having me this morning. I'm grateful for your time.
That's Scott Seaborg, allvotingislocal.org. Now, don't go away. When we come back, Pat Toomey making the announcement that Senator Casey mentioned, and we'll also hear about the upcoming Friends of the Poor event. Don't go away. Welcome back to Special Edition. This past week, the Friends of the Poor announced the changes for the upcoming Thanksgiving programs, and U.S. Senator Pat Toomey announced that he's not running for re-election.
Good morning, and thanks for being here. Special thanks to my family for joining me today, my wife Chris, my son Patrick on the far left, my daughter Bridget, and our son Duncan. My family and I have reached a decision, and I wanted to share that with the people of Pennsylvania. And that is that I will not be running for re-election in 2022, and I will not be running for governor. I will serve out the remainder of my term for a little over 2 years that are left to the current term. And after that, my plan is to go back to the private sector. I want to say very clearly that representing the people of Pennsylvania, this big, beautiful, complicated, diverse state, has been an extraordinary, amazing honor. It still is. And it's been by far the highlight of my professional life. The reasons that I've reached this decision are not political. They're personal. The decision is consistent with the long-held view I've had in support of term limits. I committed myself to limiting my terms in the House. I didn't do that in the Senate, but I always thought that I'd probably serve just two terms, and often mentioned that along the way. But the real reasons are, by the time I finish this term, I will have been in public office for 18 years. Over a 24-year period, there was a six-year hiatus, but even then, I was very involved in government and politics, running the Club for Growth, and spending two of those years running for the Senate. 18 years is a long time. And, you know, all of that time, our family has lived in Pennsylvania. That was the right decision for our family. And I've spent as little time as I can in Washington, coming back home as quickly as I can after the end of official business. But it still ends up being a lot of time away from home. And I'm looking forward to more time back at home. I have no specific plans, and I'm not going to spend time or energy thinking about what I'll do later until a good 2 years from now, because I've got a lot of work still ahead of me. I'm really pleased with the work I've been able to do. These past 10 years have been extraordinary. I've focused on policies that I believe will help maximize opportunity and prosperity in Pennsylvania and across the country. I was grateful to be able to play a significant role on the tax reform and regulatory relief, trade policy. Across Pennsylvania, Senator Casey and I have developed a great working relationship in filling vacancies on our federal bench, and he and I together have outpaced every other divided delegation and almost every other delegation in the Senate in the category of filling vacancies on the federal bench, and we've done so with just some wonderful, talented people across Pennsylvania. Fighting the opioid crisis, fighting for victims of crime, standing with the police and law enforcement, these are some of the things I've focused on, and I will continue to focus on over the course of these next 2 years. There'll also be another time further down the road when I'll have a chance to give proper recognition and express my appreciation to the people who have made my service possible. So, literally millions of supporters across Pennsylvania to whom I will always be grateful for this opportunity. The staff that works for me across the Commonwealth as well as in Washington, there's no doubt in my mind I've got the best staff in Washington. They are just incredibly talented, capable men and women who get up every day and work as hard as they can to serve the people of Pennsylvania and our country, and they do a phenomenal job. And most of all, my family, especially my wife, Chris, she and our family made a lot of unseen sacrifices over the years so that I would be able to pursue this passion. But as I say, I've got 2 years left, and my intention is to work as hard as I possibly can. I will have the luxury, in a way, of not having a campaign to manage at the same time. It is my hope that I'll be the chairman of the Senate Banking Committee, because I am hopeful and cautiously optimistic that my Republican colleagues will prevail in a number of tough races and we will be in the majority. And I hope to be serving these last 2 years with President Donald Trump having been reelected. I support his campaign, I support his reelection, and I'm looking forward to the great things that he and a Republican-controlled Senate, together with a House of whatever political configuration it ends up being, what we can accomplish in the years ahead. And with that, I'd be happy to take a couple of questions.
Senator, what role did what was a very difficult debate last week, most of the country seems to believe, the president's diagnosis of having COVID-19, being in the hospital, and what appears to be difficult messaging around what his condition is. What role did that play in you deciding not to run again?
That played absolutely no role whatsoever. I reached this decision before the president was diagnosed. No role whatsoever.
Why announce this now?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the reason I decided to announce this is because in recent weeks especially, I've been getting phone calls almost on a daily basis from people who have said, I want to help you run for governor. I want to help your reelection campaign. I want to host a fundraiser. I want to reach out to this group of folks. There's many, many different ways that people all from all over Pennsylvania have been reaching out. And once I reach the decision, I need to be candid with them. And I feel like I should be candid with everybody. So that's the main reason. I've made a decision. It's not going to change. And so I want to let everybody know.
Are there any specific Republicans you think are best to run for governor?
So I have not thought a lot about that. I suspect we will have quite a number of candidates, at least initially, and I am very confident we will field a terrific candidate, and I look forward to supporting that candidate. There's a lot that I hope we'll be able to do. We have, when we reformed the tax code in response to the reformed code and some regulatory changes, the American economy reached new highs. Outperformed virtually all expectations. We had the strongest economy of my entire life. Unfortunately, some of the provisions in the tax reform are set to expire. So one of the most constructive things we can do to help people get back to work and to have higher wages is to make those provisions permanent. We've also got an opportunity to expand economic opportunity through more trade. I would like to see our country pursue free trade agreements with the UK, with the EU, with many countries in Asia. It is very, very good for us economically to do that. It'll also be good geopolitically as a way to bring allied countries together to strengthen our ability to stand up to bad behavior on the part of the Chinese Communist government. That's going to be important. If I do get a chance to chair the Banking Committee, there's some really important work I'd like to do in that space. We still have Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac in conservatorship. This is the great unfinished work of the financial crisis, and I would like to bring an end to the status of those two giants. I'd also like to see if there are ways, I know there are ways, I'd like us to be able to expand opportunities for middle-income Americans to be investors at lower costs with more opportunities for them to benefit from a generally growing economy. There's very exciting things happening in technology, fintech, payment systems, the possibility of a digital currency. All of these things are really important and exciting changes, and they're going to require some new legislation, some new regulation, and all of those are things that I look forward to working on in these next 2 years.
Senator, do you still believe that considering there are, I think, three members of the U.S. Senate now who've contracted COVID-19, maybe more, that Judge Barrett should have hearings and be voted on prior to the election or even close to after the election, considering the contract of COVID in the U.S.?
So it has very, very long been the custom in the United States that when the two organs of government responsible for the Supreme Court, for populating the court, that is to say the president who nominates and the Senate that confirms, when those two institutions are led by the same party, then nominees are confirmed in whether it's a presidential year or not. So I think we should go forward on this. I think we can absolutely do it safely. I have every confidence that Senator Lindsey Graham, who will be responsible for conducting the Judiciary Committee hearings, will do so in a way that keeps people safe. As we approached the election, there was increasing interest in the next cycle. That happens. And as the only elected statewide Republican other than judges, it was understandable that people would ask me what my plans were. And as people were offering support and there was increasing discussion about it, I just wanted to be candid with people. And once I made my decision, I thought it's best to let people know. And if I'm going to let some people know, I should let everybody know. I also think, frankly, it will be helpful for Republicans across the state who are thinking about running either for the Senate or for governor to have a little more time to lay out their plan, get organized, and launch their campaigns. But I'll be finished 2 years from now after I work as hard as I can to have two really good, productive years. I would also just mention, there's no question we are extremely polarized, and that manifests itself in Congress all the time. But when we were in a full-blown crisis, Congress came together and we passed absolutely unprecedented legislation on a massive scale. We did it quickly, and we did it, I think, unanimously. So fortunately, we were able to come together when the country really needed it. Thank you all very much. I appreciate it.
The Friends of the Poor make Thanksgiving special. They will again this year. It'll just be a little bit different. Intercom's Frank Andrews finds out how with CEO of Friends of the Poor, Megan Loftus.
You know, the big dinner at the Cultural Center, you know, I mean, thousands and thousands of people and the food giveaway. How do you do that in a pandemic?
So we really thought about that because this will be the 44th year for the dinner, and it's a staple in the community, and a lot of people depend on it. So we didn't want to just let it go, you know, with all that 2020 has thrown at us. So for the dinner, we're still going to meet at the Cultural Center with our volunteers, and we're going to pack the hot meal into takeout containers and then distribute it on the corner of North Washington and Vine as people can drive by. And then for those adults and elderly that, you know, are wheelchair bound or have mobility issues that we typically would bus in, we're going to partner with the Lackawanna County Area Agency on Aging and Meals on Wheels to have meals delivered to them.
Do you have any idea how many meals you're talking about?
3,000 still.
3,000. Now, the first thing I think of when I hear you saying that is you might need a few volunteers too, right? How do people help?
We definitely need volunteers, but we're asking everybody who'd like to volunteer to either call or email us ahead of time because we still have to make sure we have enough space to spread out and maintain social distancing so everyone can be safe. So just give us a call at our office or send us a quick email and let us know what your plans are.
Will there be the family-to-family food distribution, the Thanksgiving food?
Absolutely. That'll be the next day, Wednesday, November 25th. We're going to go from 10 a.m. to 5:30 p.m., but instead of being at the Cultural Center this year, we'll be at Scranton High School, so we can do a drive-by as we've been doing for the COVID giveaways, where we just put the groceries in people's trunks.
Okay, final question. If people want to make a donation, a cash, a money donation to you guys, how do they do that? And again, well, who do they call or how do they connect with you guys to be a volunteer?
So we're asking for monetary donations this year instead of in-kind donations. With the takeout dinner and the family-to-family, we need a lot of PPE. We need a lot of takeout containers and things that are unique that we had to order ahead of time. So monetary donations can be sent to Friends of the Poor at 2300 Adams Ave, Scranton, PA, 18509. Or you can donate on our website, FOTP-IHM.org. And both of those are great ways to get in touch with us, to email us or call us at 570-340-6086 to volunteer.
Anything we can do at any point to help, you give us a call, okay?
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Megan Loftus, CEO Friends of the Poor, reminding us about their 44th annual Thanksgiving community program that will be coming to Scranton November 24th and 25th. And also on Friday, November 20th, the Interfaith Prayer Service will be held. But this year, guests are invited to join in via Zoom. You can make reservations through the Scranton Area Ministerium. Coming up next on Special Edition, a visit to the dentist and where in Luzerne County you can get help for your small business affected by the pandemic. Don't go away. Welcome back to Special Edition. In this segment, we'll be hearing from John Augustine. He's from Penns Northeast, and he has the details of how small businesses in Luzerne County can get help if they were affected by the COVID-19 pandemic. But first, we meet Kinsey Ferguson. She's the Vice President of Delta Dental of California. They have affiliates throughout Northeast Pennsylvania. Kinsey gives us good suggestions for keeping our smile bright.
We're going to talk a little bit about dental for those who are a little bit older. What age group are you talking about, Kinsey?
Well, I think we generally look at it, people over 65, which is not old. But when you look at some of the statistics, we're talking mostly people over 65.
And what are the statistics? What seems to be, you know, because I would think at that point in time, we've all taken very good care of our teeth and hopefully they're still hanging around. But I guess maybe in some cases it's not.
Indeed, yeah. So I think that you see there's a lot of gum disease in people over 65. Actually, it affects 70% of people over 65. And one in five people have untreated tooth decay, which is, you know, a bit scary when you have a full teeth of mouth most of your life and then you start to lose them.
Do you think that that has a lot to do with the fact that maybe once people get to be over 65, they just figure, I don't have to worry about it anymore because my teeth have done all that they're going to do?
Oh, gosh, I hope not. Because I think that, you know, I'd love being able to smile and have those pearly whites sparkle. It's really important to take care of your teeth. Brushing and flossing are really fairly easy things to do, but also going to the dentist once or twice a year helps catch problems early on, which is really important because waiting is definitely worse when it comes to your oral health.
Now, when you mention other problems, again, especially for older adults, that can mean something that maybe they didn't even realize, and it's not just in their mouth.
Exactly. When you look at what is going on in your mouth, it affects your overall body. So when we found that gum disease is linked to chronic conditions, I mean, like you name it, heart disease, diabetes, Alzheimer's, these are things that you can that start in your mouth and spread to your body, and vice versa. So I think it helps maintain a healthy immune system, which is really important now that we're heading into the flu season and during a pandemic. It's really important to take care of your oral health.
Been to the dentist myself, and I know, of course, with all of the pandemic concerns, and they're really taking a lot of extra caution. But do you think that's one thing that might keep older Americans away?
You know, that is a concern, I think, for a lot of people. Now, I went into the dentist, and it was very simple. You had to wait outside, but I was the only person in there. They took my temperature. Everything is being cleaned constantly, and there are shields and protective gear. So I felt extremely safe, safer in the dentist's office, I think, than outside.
That's probably very true. And that, again, should make older Americans feel a lot better about the fact that they are taking care of their oral health. But what are some of the things, because, again, I think you may also be looking at generational aspects here, where some of us didn't have things like dental floss when we were growing up. So does that also play a part when you talk about flossing and things like that?
I think so. I mean, I don't know anybody that loves flossing, so it's not a thing that comes naturally. Brushing your teeth, flossing, you can use different tools now, electric toothbrushes, water picks. Dental picks can be especially helpful if you're having a hard time flossing or you have bridges. But there are some fun things, too, you can do. There are different flavors of floss that you can use. I just ordered some online, coconut floss, orange floss, chocolate-flavored floss. So I'm going to try them out and see if it might help me, encourage me to floss more.
Well, we're going to have you come back on and tell us about your experience with all that. Chocolate floss? That almost sounds decadent.
You shouldn't
be having those sweet things, I guess, if you're going to the dentist. And what about diet? Does diet also play a part when we're talking about those over 65?
Well, I think that the biggest thing you can do is that you can sugary drinks. If you can reduce that, you're going to be much better off. But there are some things I think just in general for your overall health, because oral health is health, that you really can change your diet, eat crunchy vegetables, exercise more. All the good things that your doctor tells you to do are going to help you maintain a good set of teeth and good gums.
All right, Kenzie, I want you to leave some excellent words of wisdom for our listeners who are concerned about taking care of their oral health as they continue to get older.
Well, one of the things that I wanted to leave you with is that as we're getting older and as people are starting to think about retiring, one of the things that people may not know is Medicare does not currently cover dental care. But the good news is that there's relatively inexpensive plans out there. You can go through AARP. Of course, you can go through Delta Dental. And you can find oral health care coverage. Because at Delta Dental, we really believe your smile should last a lifetime. So take care of the pearly whites.
Intercom's Frank Andrews and Mark Davis talk with John Augustine from Penns Northeast about help for Northeast Pennsylvania businesses.
Well, while the national news is the stall in negotiations over a stimulus bill, we have on the line with us right now someone who's going to talk about some help for small businesses. John Augustine is the president and CEO of Penns Northeast, and I invited Mark Davis to come in and join us for this conversation. Well, John, I'm excited to hear about this program because, you know, Mark and I have made it a commitment to do everything we could to help the businesses. So tell us what's going on.
Well, and I appreciate that. We know that we've had numerous band-aids, whether it's been the federal, state government, to try to save as many of the small businesses, which are the backbone of our economy, as we can. Thanks to Dave Pedry and his team and his leadership, they got some COVID money, and I think we're really smart in how they allocated it. So basically, some of the parameters are that we have $3 million available for nonprofits, with the preference that they have 51% or more with Health and Human Services. And then we have $8 million available for small businesses that have $500,000 in revenue or less and 15 employees or less. The goal here is to try to get as much money out to as many businesses as possible. We know this won't be a be-all, end-all, but it's something that they can add to their pot. The way that we did this, and just a couple of things, and then happy to answer any questions, you can go to PennsNortheast.com, so that's Penns, plural, Northeast.com. That will take you to the beginning of the application. You'll leave our page, and you go to the Community First Fund. A couple of key points. All of the criteria, all of the examples, everything that everybody needs is there. But one of the problems we're running into is people aren't completing their applications. They're missing a document, or we have some businesses filing under for-profit or nonprofit instead of the right thing. So they really need to take the time to print that out and go through it. We did this as a two-week window, so it's not a first-come, first-served. We have plenty of money. We have about 200 applicants so far, but there's still a ton of money left. The window will close on October 14th at 11:59. It will then take 3 to 4 weeks to review those applications, and then we'll notify those. We're splitting the money evenly based on COVID expenses. They cannot double dip, meaning if you've gotten money from the state or somewhere else for, let's say, your phone bill, you can't apply for the phone bill for this. It has to be for something else COVID related. And then finally, we would tell people to check their spam, their trash files, their clutter files, because they might be getting stuff from a third party called Lendistry, who's doing an anonymous check. Like I said, this is not first come, first serve. This is not who you know or what you know. This is completely anonymous. We have a pile of money, and we want to get it out to as many people as possible. The website is in English and Spanish, and there is also a toll-free call center number from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., which is also bilingual.
Now, John, especially with the nonprofits, I know a lot of nonprofits because we had Jerry Champion several times from FNCB. The Payroll Protection Program was highly successful in this area for nonprofits. So if you've used and got approved for PPP and you've used that money, you just can't go in and get the same money for the same expense. It has to be something different within the nonprofit, right?
Correct. We did not tie our funding to any other program, meaning if you've got money in general, you can't get money. But if you've applied for something specific, you can't apply for that again. You will get audited. So
right, because
if you got PPP money for payroll for the first 3 months, but now you have an issue in the last 3 months, you know, that would be an eligible expense. And we have all of those on the website. So yes, to answer your question, those restrictions aren't there as long as it's not for the same thing.
All right, because it's very specific in the PPP program that it goes for certain things during a certain time frame and everything else. So this would be money available for those kinds of expenses outside of what a business or a nonprofit would have received from PPP.
Yep, and again, that's why we recommend that people, you know, you have till next week, print out the guidelines, read them twice, read them three times, and then as you're uploading documents, you know, check mark each one, because we're doing our best to go back to people who didn't complete it. But if at 11:30 we get 50 applicants that aren't complete, there's not much we're going to be able to do.
John,
so we tried to make this as general as possible to help as many small businesses all throughout Luzerne County.
You know, I have two questions. First of all, what has been kind of the initial response to this when people began to hear about it? And second of all, what is your take on the small businesses in our area? Are many of them really, really suffering? Are there some that are just not going to be able to make it?
So to answer your first question, the response has been very good so far. We launched this on Thursday, so you really only had 2 business days to start this. And again, there's a lot of information that needs to go there, so that's why I suggest read, and do it right the first time. We have a lot of applications coming out of Wilkes-Barre and Hazleton City, so we're going to spend this week trying to hit the boroughs, the townships, some of the outlying areas where we're only seeing 1 or 2 applications, but we know there are small businesses there. Again, this is, you know, not everybody's going to get $1 million, but we want to help as much as we can. Unfortunately, in these unprecedented times, there are businesses that even if we give them another shot in the arm, another Band-Aid, they're just not going to make it. There are a lot of businesses that were struggling prior to COVID, mm-hmm. and this is kind of, you know, the nail in the coffin. And so, you know, I'm thankful from the federal government, the state government, and Dave Pedry and his team that we're at least doing our best to get money out there to help as many as we can. But really what's going to happen, there's no crystal ball, but the next few months are going to be, you know, very difficult as we go from, you know, certain amount of occupancy in or out. And, you know, when you think about restaurants, it's nice to sit outside in the summer and eat. Well, what are you going to do in the winter? And now you have to buy heaters and other things to survive from that standpoint. So it's a trickle effect. You don't turn the faucet on 100% and you don't shut it off. You start it and you keep going. But, you know, I think we're going to see a lot of businesses fail. And we're just trying to do our best to make sure we can save as many as possible.
Now, John, these are grants, correct?
They are grants.
Oh, they are grants. So and what size of grants are we talking about? Is there a limit to funding? Is there a range? Or is it each case is looked at individually?
Each case is looked at individually based on your expenses. And then what we're going to do is, assuming those expenses add up, we are going to do our best to average that $8 million, for example, in the for-profit sector across the board. Mm-hmm. With the idea that, hey, you're a small business, somebody else is a small business, you're not going to get $60,000 and somebody else is going to get $120,000. That's one of the things the state did. They scored differently. We're trying to be as fair as possible and help as many businesses possible with an equal number.
Well, John, we just got a whole bunch of people texting saying, what's the contact information again? Where do we go? What do we look for?
Sure. You can do it whatever is easier for folks. But our website is www.pennsnsnortheast.com, or you can go to the luzernecounty.org website. Both have links right on the homepage. They will take you to what's called the Community First Fund. That's a group that led the state effort. And I want people to know that we didn't just make this up. The state, if you're following DCD, they're announcing daily those that received the state money through the CDFI program. We followed all their guidelines to make it as simple as possible. And then we used a third-party company to process the loans, do the background checks, and make sure that it's completely anonymous. So either PennsNortheast.com or LuzerneCounty.org, you'll see a big button on the homepage for either of those sites. They'll take you to the same place. And the 1-800, the 188 number, the call center is also on there if people have questions.
And John, do us a favor. At the end of the process, when you're ready to award the money, either you or Dave Pedrick, get back to us and let us know who was able to get some funding to stretch their dollars through the pandemic.
Yeah, we will absolutely do that. You know, we'll have some great statistics in terms of the types of folks that applied, the types of business applied. So it's a great learning process. I just want to thank you guys for giving me the time to come out here, because what we don't want is somebody to say, I didn't know about this.
Right.
Thanks for listening to Special Edition, a weekly look at the issues in the news and the personalities shaping the stories, a production of Entercom Communications.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.